Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. It is Mental Health Awareness Month, so we reserve time every day this week to talk about one of the seven feelings discussed in the new book written by Liz Fosslien and Molly West Duffy called Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. Each day this week, Liz and Molly have been joining us to take on one feeling a day from the book, so we're calling this Big Feelings Week. Already this week, we have discussed perfectionism, regret, and despair. Today, we turn to a feeling on the rise since the pandemic began, burnout. Liz and Molly write in the book about burnout, quote, "We think we'll be able to tell when our brains are fried, but staying afloat while fielding a firestorm of notifications and hurtling from one meeting to the next can be so emotionally consuming that we don't even realize the extent of our fatigue." Joining me now to discuss burnout and to take your calls is Molly West Duffy, co-author of the book, Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. Molly, thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me back.
Listeners, for Big Feelings Week Day 4, have you felt burnout in the last few years? What led to you feeling so exhausted? How did you work through it? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can tweet to us or DM us on Instagram at allofitwnyc, same hashtag for those, same handle for those. What are some things you like to do when you're feeling exhausted or burnout after the end of the week? Have you changed your work habits because of it? We'd like to hear why or why not. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, at allofitwnyc, same handle for Instagram or Twitter. All right, you write about burnout. In 2019, it was officially recognized as a diagnosable condition in the United States. What have been the main contributors to burnout, to have it be led to be a diagnosable condition? That's wild.
Absolutely. There's a lot of structural forces that play here. And I think a lot of times we do place the burden on the individual. But the burden of burnout does accrue unevenly. So women, people identifying as women, people of color do experience more burnout than their, you know, other counterparts. And, you know, I think we often think about managers, CEOs, elected officials as the only ones who can really cure our burnout. And that probably is true, but there are things that, you know, us as individuals can do. It does take time and it does require effort, but there are things that we can do.
A lot of people point to capitalism as a root cause of burnout. Is there a case to be made for this?
I argue yes. So at its core, I think that capitalism, you know, if we think about supply side economics, deinstitutionalization, we live in a society without a real safety net. And I personally feel like I would be less stressed if my health insurance and my retirement and my ability to pay for my rent or my mortgage and my future children's education, like, didn't rely solely on my ability to work as many hours as possible.
You outlined the burnout continuum with five levels of most to least: positive, engaged, overextended, disengaged, ineffective, and then burned out. At what point on this continuum should someone stop, take a break, reset?
Yes. So as early as possible. So as you said, we think we'll be able to tell when we're burned out, but actually one of the most dangerous aspects of burnout is that it impacts our self-awareness. So when you're in it, we run on adrenaline, can actually feel good. We're like getting things done. We have momentum. And then suddenly we get sick or we have something else added to our plate. Something happens in the world and the economy and we feel like we hit a wall. And so recognizing those early warning signs. So one of the ones that I share most frequently is that you think getting sick, not COVID sick, but maybe a cold, would actually feel nice because it would force you to shut down for a bit. You find everyone and everything irritating. You're so overwhelmed that you've started to cut out activities that you know are good for you. And again, I want to recognize that not everyone has the ability, depending on the job or multiple jobs that they are working, to cut back. And, you know, as you talked about capitalism, but if you do have an ability to take a break, it is best to do that as early as possible, because once you do hit burnout, it can take weeks or even months to recover from that. And we're really good at ignoring those early warning signs.
Yeah, it sounds like that moment between engaged and overextended, when engaged gets into a dangerous level.
Exactly.
Let's take a call. Carrie's calling in from New Jersey. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Was the question.
I'm a teacher and I played hooky today because I took a personal day and I'm feeling that burnout that you guys are talking about, and I needed to take care of myself. It's just been a rough, 2 years with the pandemic and the masks, and I feel that as a society, we're kind of ignoring our youth and what happened. Mm-hmm. The mental health aspect is not being addressed. School systems, not all school systems, but many are saying, well, look at, the math scores and the science scores, and they're not looking at the toll, the mental toll that mm-hmm. this took on the students, teachers, every day I go to work and the kids are sneezing. It's allergy season. I don't know who has COVID. It's
a lot.
It's tough. And then I have to go home. Yeah. I have to go home myself to my own children,
Carrie,
elderly parents.
I'm so glad you took so glad you took a personal day. That's awesome. That's really good that you did that. Carrie calling in from New Jersey. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you too. Have you felt burnout in the last few years? What led you to feel exhausted? How did you get through it? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. The subject of the day is burnout. We'd like to hear perhaps how you've changed your habits so that you don't get burned out. 212-433-WNYC. My guest is Molly West Duffy. She's a co-author with Liz Fosslien of the book Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. And we are talking about burnout. So what are some of the strategies to break these stress cycles people get in?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. So the stress cycle is something that humans are actually biologically designed to do. Throughout the course of human history, there have been many stressors, but the stress cycle is something that we don't always complete. So our ancestors maybe were running away from animals on the savannah and they would be very stressed, but then they would find safety and they would move into that rest and digest phase. We don't do that. So we get stressed and then we go into the next meeting where we continue to get stressed and we go home and our kids are stressors and we never complete that stress cycle. So how do we complete that? According to some researchers, the Nagoski sisters, they wrote a great book called Burnout. There are 7 things to do. The first one is crying. Crying can break the stress cycle. Taking slow, deep breaths, doing a physical activity, laughing, hanging out with friends, doing something creative like writing or drawing, and then lastly, engaging in physical affection like asking for a hug. So trying to build those moments into your day to complete the cycle can be helpful.
We also want to point out that burnout can show up not just at work. I think people think I'm burned out on work, but in other areas of your life, like if you're a caregiver or even in friendships, how does burnout manifest itself when you're in a friendship or in a caregiving situation?
Yes. So we feel like, oh, unless I'm, working 100 hours a week, I shouldn't be burned out. But you may be burned out from, as you said, things that happen outside of work, and just the sum total is too much. Mm. So one thing that you can do is get better at drawing boundaries. This is really difficult for all of us to do, but no one else is going to draw them for you. We wonder, like, why isn't my spouse or my manager, why don't I have a parent around anymore who can help me not overdo it? And you are the only one who's going to do that. So asking yourself, if I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? Because there are going to be trade-offs. And it can be helpful to come up with rules. So my co-author Liz has rules where she says, I don't do social things 3 nights a week, because if I say yes to too many things, then I'm burned out by the end of the week. And people sometimes respect rules more so than if you just give the one off. And in the situation where you are in a caregiver situation, there may be other things that you do have to say no to because of these demands that are placed on you.
Let's see. Working Bulb on Twitter says, I was working 12-hour days as a social worker. We had trainings where they told us we had to make time to take care of ourselves. Someone actually brought a pillow to one of those performative sessions. People think being a machine is cool. It's death. Let's talk to Jason on line 4. Hi, Jason. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Let's hear about you.
Good, good. Thanks so much for taking this call. I think it's wonderful what you're doing. This program is such a service to so many people. You know, what I was just thinking of is what being unemployed for 18 months during the pandemic was stressful. My partner, she was working from home, was isolated. And one of the things that we just did every single day was just set time for each other. We take walks every day, religiously. I'm reading more than I ever have in my life, just because I never had time, because of the isolation, because of the pandemic, and learning more, and just trying to give time to just things that I never had time to do in the past. So it's just been a real time to kind of reset and recharge, appreciate nature. We're going on hikes now and just doing more things that we can do, because the world is so uneasy. There's so much unrest. This pandemic has been brutal. It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for calling in. That's one of the things you talk about, Molly, and in the book that you should, and not that taking a walk with your partner is garbage time. You call it garbage time. explain to folks why this is important to set aside some time.
Yes. So garbage time came from Brené Brown, whose work we love. She's an author. And when she was on deadline for her most recent book, she was feeling not very productive. She had a lot of pages to write. And so she said, okay, I'm going to do a little writing retreat. And so her husband took the kids for a weekend, took them out of town, and she had the weekend to write. And he came back with the kids and he said, how did it go? And she said, well, I watched 36 episodes of Law and Order. And he said, well, that's not why I took the kids away for the weekend. Like, you were supposed to be writing. But then later on in the week, she was the most productive that she had been. And what she realized was she needed that time to decompress, and then she was able to get productive after that. And so we have this idea that we can be productive 24 hours a day, and that's just simply not how our brains or bodies work. We do need that time to decompress. And as the, you know, Jason just shared, for some people that's taking a walk, that's reading books. For me, it's, you know, sometimes reading celebrity news, you know, things that just make us feel like we can relax a little bit are incredibly important to build into our schedule. They are part of being productive.
Let's go to Linda on line 3, calling in from Huntington. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Oh, this is so cool. What a timely segment this is. I'm actually driving between my 98-year-old lady, who I love, that I help, and my 92-year-old mom, who's in a facility, and here comes this segment. And I thought, oh my God, this morning I was so burned out, I could hardly even get out of bed. My partner and I have very busy work schedules. We both have 92-year-old mothers that we're part of a care team for. We squeeze in a bike ride at the lovely Comset State Park here on Long Island, get out in nature from time to time. And a friend of mine from childhood, we've known each other since we're 10, so that puts us at just under 60 years together. She lost her husband, and we're going to a memorial up in the Cape Cod area this weekend. And I said to my partner, could we please take some extra time to stay up in that area and enjoy, get out in nature, relax? And so we are. We're going away for the week to try to recharge our batteries and get some time away from all of our responsibilities. We're just really burned out.
I want you to have a great time. Have a lobster roll, pick up some shells,
And we wish you a great trip, Linda. My guest is Molly West Duffy. We are talking about big feelings, how to be okay when things are not okay. So when we're talking about being burned out, what are some of the myths you want to bust for people, Molly?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the big ones is that burnout looks the same for everyone. And so we see our colleagues, our partners, and we're like, well, I'm not dealing with that, so I'm not burned out, or, you know, I'm not stressed like that, so I'm not burned out. And it does look very different for many of us. A lot of times what we think about burnout is being overextended or exhausted. And we've heard that from a couple of callers. But there's actually two other aspects to burnout. So one is feeling disengaged. And usually this comes up in a workplace context where you feel cynicism, you don't feel connected to your colleagues, you lack empathy for those around you. And then the second one is being ineffective. So you feel that what you're trying really hard, but you're not being productive. And you may actually be being productive. So your perception is that you are not, and that you are ineffective. And those two, being disengaged and ineffective, we don't think of, but the clinical definition of burnout includes all three of those things. So overextended, disengaged, and ineffective. And so we want people to watch for those other two as signs. And then, as I mentioned before, one of the big myths is that burnout is obvious and that addressing burnout isn't urgent unless you're falling apart. And we feel like we just need to put one foot in front of the other and there's no need for concern or rest. And so we just keep pushing and pushing. And then we get to a point, and I have been there. So after our first book came out, I experienced deep burnout. I was working a full-time job. Book came out, I was moving, there's all these things, and I had to take time away. So Liz, my co-author, ended up having to do a lot of our book events for us because I just couldn't take it on anymore. And it took months of really restructuring my life to get out of it. And I wish that I would have noticed some of those warning signs earlier and taken action on them.
If someone here is listening and they're a manager and they're worried, you know, I think I have people on my team who are burned out, what is some advice or a strategy you would offer someone who is managing people?
Absolutely. So thinking about burnout as a collective, or combating burnout as a collective practice, can be really helpful. So it's, you know, we say to people, you need to take a lunch break and you need to meditate and you need to take a walk in the middle of the day, but then we're putting all of that on the individual. So as a manager, can you make finding balance a collective practice? So what might that look like? Well, it might mean that collectively you're going to start your meetings 5 minutes late to give people time in between meetings, or you're going to spend the first minute of a meeting closing your eyes and just taking some deep breaths together. You can also dedicate time to not have meetings. So meetingless Fridays or Friday afternoons, not scheduling calls over lunch break. And then training managers to be supportive and create reasonable workloads. And so managers can ask their team members things like, what is one thing that I can do to better support you? What kind of flexibility do you need right now? And then even saying, what is on your plate and how can I help you prioritize that? So people often feel like I just need to keep saying yes to everything that comes in. But managers can say, I know you have a lot going on. You're not going to be able to get to all of it. Let me help you prioritize that work.
The name of the book is Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. We are very lucky to have Molly West Duffy with us and Liz Fosling this week as part of our Big Feelings Week. Molly, thanks once again for being with us. We'll wrap this all up tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
And that is all of it for today. I appreciate you and I appreciate your listening. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you back here next time.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.